Did you know that our highway system came from Eisenhower's Federal Aid Act of 1956? It's an effort that many historians regard as the country's greatest, most impactful public works project. Or how about the internet? Well, the internet as we know it today is really more of a result of several incremental successes, all piled on one after the next, than it is, say, the brainchild of a single inventor or single project. The first workable prototype was introduced in the late 1960s by a group called the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network. This group was funded by the U.S. Department of Defense. Or taking a look at more recent history, funding and support for the National Institute of Health has been credited with having a crucial role in discovering as much as 60% of our society's most important drugs. While these discoveries, of course, have a huge impact on our health, naturally, they also have an impact on the health of our economy. For example, it funded the Human Genome Project, a $3.6 billion undertaking that, one, revolutionized medical science as we know it. It gave us a better understanding of the DNA structure. And two, returned an estimated $800 billion in impact, as well as created over 300,000 jobs. What do these three examples have in common? Well, they're all examples of government-led innovation. But people don't recall these kind of groundbreaking achievements nearly as quickly as they do a horror story when it comes to government. Too often, politics or an assumed status quo masks these types of wins, and with them, the value of our nation's most critical resources. And that's why we here at Salesforce created this podcast. There's so many imaginative, innovative, impactful projects coming from all levels of government, as well as the community government contractors, of course, that people don't always know about. We want this to be a platform to share the many inspirational, cutting-edge stories happening right now across the public sector. And the key word in there for you as the listener? Inspiration. We want you not only to be made more aware of the impact that government missions have on our nation, but we also want you to learn from these stories, apply their best practices, and develop the kind of creative mentality that comes with embarking on a project of your own. I'm Claire Lazel, Sales and Field Programs Manager here at the Salesforce Public Sector Business Unit, and this is our Digital Nation. In this podcast, I'll be exploring the exciting, evolving intersection of government, technology, and innovation. Tune in to hear firsthand accounts of how folks are bringing innovation to their missions. Learn more about the technology driving these projects and understand the market dynamics people tend to face as they start on these kinds of endeavors. And as it might not surprise you, with us being a cloud service provider, season one is about all things digital.
Our Digital Nation is brought to you by the FedRAMP-approved Salesforce Government Cloud. Give leadership, management, and employees the mobile, self-service, analytical tools they need to connect data, process, and people. Create a digital platform that puts the customer at the heart of the mission.
So let's start by looking at a little bit of the background of digital in government. It's always played such a different role in the public sector than it has in the private sector. It's been treated like a nice to have, a luxury good, even. So much of government and aerospace is rooted in the familiarity of paper forms and on-premise systems. Oftentimes, this leads to a homegrown infrastructure that's been developed bit by bit. Think of how many times you've seen a point solution that solves for only that immediate fire drill be deployed out of sheer necessity. While this might seem easier because of looming timelines or budgetary concerns, cycle through enough of these jerry-rigged exercises, and you'll find a complex Frankenstein-like structure that really only leads to cost and confusion. And of course, government has always been rather risk-averse by nature, making any new technological deployment or proposal just a little bit daunting. So, what role should digital be playing in government? Well, it should be a must-have, and that's really because of three key reasons. One, people. As timely, targeted, smartphone-ready business models have become the new norm, people have come to expect readily available, highly personalized service from the tap of their phone. Whether they're engaging as a customer or as a citizen, a voter, an employee, or even a partner in the mission, this digital revolution impacts all industries, public sector included. And as more organizations adopt these modern digital customer-centric business models, the pressure on departments and agencies to do the same is only going to intensify. Number two, process. Digital has an overwhelming potential to make mission-critical processes that much easier. Think about how easy it is to update remote teams using digital tools versus distributing paper memos, or how much faster you can accomplish a given task given the latest productivity tools. Number three, data. Digital platforms quantify so much in terms of activity, giving you an automatic and consistent source of data. Discrepancies due to human error, self-reporting, or missteps get largely reduced. An investment in digital is an investment in the mission, and government and aerospace leaders are really starting to recognize this. I got a chance to sit down with an expert on this very topic.
When you really think about any given organization, they're dealing with hundreds, in some cases thousands, of systems all running on different application stacks.
That's Todd Schroeder, Director of Digital Strategy here at Salesforce.
That complexity really leads to an incredibly fast rhythm of break, fix, and decision making. And all those decisions are really being made at the systems level. And so leadership is really challenged, I think, with truly understanding how a single decision is impacting the enterprise, the rest of their portfolio, and frankly, the mission outcomes that they all intend to produce. And, you know, as those decisions get made over the years or over the decades that many of these leaders have inherited, they're taking up about 80% of their IT budget, right?
And so
it leads to a faster rhythm, and we've got to make more decisions. We're trying to get ahead of that, but we can't because of the mode of which we're making decisions. So spending all their time on those decisions related to the legacy environment, in some cases, you know, maybe spending some of their time on new investments, but those new investments, unless coordinated or targeted, will just end up in the same kind of outcome. It's just another isolated, siloed set of decisions around a set of systems that isn't plugged into any true enterprise outcomes. And all of that duplication, really, in the legacy environment is plaguing leadership in that decision-making process. On the other side of this, we have the customer's expectations, right? And our internal government employees' expectations and hopes and aspirations of using technology are really grounded in their consumer experiences. I can go on to Amazon and buy anything at any time from my phone. I get notifications on when things show up to my door. They want that same level of engagement and personalization, mobile experiences, all of those things in how they deliver their day-to-day job. And that is an unmet expectation on the customer side. So as an IT leader, you've got this legacy job of making decisions on maintaining what you've got. You have these customer expectations. You have your own priorities as a leader, moving to the cloud, meeting new policy and regulations, improving cybersecurity. And then you also have, you know, the tipping point of what's happening from the marketplace itself, right? We see new legislation being crafted. We see new policies coming out. And so these IT leaders are really at the nucleus of that.
Like they
have all these forcing functions on them about technology and assisting to deliver better experiences to the citizens and the employees, reduce cost, increase security. And that's really the dilemma is what are the decisions or set of decisions I need to make practically to take a step out of that and set ourselves on a better path.
What I almost hear you describing here is like a Venn diagram, if you will. On one side, you've got kind of the government process, the legacy IT and everything that kind of weights that circle, if you will, to one particular direction. And on the other side of that Venn diagram, you have, like you said, your consumer expectations, your customer expectations, be it employees or citizens of like a municipality or what have you. And as each of those sides of your Venn diagram gets weighted, they get pulled further and further away. And that shrinking middle becomes that digital dilemma.
That's correct.
Prior to joining our team here at Salesforce, Todd served as the chief of a digital service center in the public sector industry. Now, I can't name which agency due to the permissions process, but what I can tell you is that this digital service center served as, well, really more of a competency center, a center of excellence, if you will, that was responsible for standardizing application development across each of their systems. When a team needed a new application to support, let's say, a certain function, Todd and his team provided the skills, the process, and the infrastructure
that had all been cataloged from previous projects and best practices. What this created was a shared service model that helped the entire organization move faster, use their resources more efficiently, and overall just be more productive.
When I first started with MSA, I was part of a emergency response deployment unit.
Okay.
So I was writing mobile applications on Palm Pilots at the time.
You're going to date yourself there, my friend.
And the model was such that, you know, we would get a call on a Friday and there was an emergency outbreak that was very perilous to the agriculture industry. Entire states based their agriculture economics on a single production of citrus in Florida,
sure,
potatoes in Idaho, whatever it may be. And so these are very disastrous situations. And so to go fight that fight or, you know, solve that problem, we were developing software on the fly. Many times I would arrive someplace in the country and, you know, a dirt field somewhere, and we were having to write code that allowed people to survey fields, take that information in, inform regulatory policymakers on how we were going to quarantine areas, how we were going to mitigate challenges. And there was no way to deliver that level of speed, that high velocity of developing software, because it was always brand new, right? And so instead of leveraging a platform that would allow you to quickly configure and deploy new applications to serve an emergency response role, we had to build that on our own. That triggered in and of itself a new system every time we responded to an emergency, right? So that kind of dilemma was, you know, the agency IT was managing agency IT applications, but every time there was a pivot or a response or there was rapid change inside of a program, it always resulted in new applications. So every year, the system portfolio grew and grew and grew. The root cause is really a result of defining the problem we're trying to solve, right? So we oftentimes find ourselves thinking about how do we get our whole organization of, you know, 140,000 employees to use the same PICA system. And I think the reality is, if the problem is not so much about how do we get people to adopt the same system, it's how do we get people to leverage the capabilities out of a platform to conduct their jobs. And so, you know, there's kind of three main culprits to that problem. There's a historic approach to systems-oriented governance that's really driving that level of thinking, right? They're traditionally, they've identified the system as the scope of the problem they're trying to solve. And then they're making decisions about that system or infrastructure instead of making decisions about strategic platforms, application platforms, or SaaS platforms.
You see a lot of these cutting edge companies and startups and whatnot. You know, I feel like everybody from tiny shops all the way up to huge enterprises, Fortune 500s, have, you know, several of them have really figured out how to solve this digital dilemma. Why do you think it's so difficult for government and aerospace? And, you know, if you look at some of the reasons behind that, what would be maybe two to three that you would highlight as top contenders, top contributors?
I think a lot of the thought patterns, we go back to saying we make decisions on a systems basis. That decision approach is really driven by how this market, how the government operates. So there's rules, regulations, and policies that are all related to systems. If I build a system, I have to run it through the capital planning investment control process. If I build a system, I have to get an authority to operate on that system. If I build a system, I have to govern that system. If we're operating at that system level, then we're never really truly able to make enterprise strategic decisions that are going to impact the whole organization. We're still operating, you know, in a micro level. And it's a requirement to operate that way.
Yeah.
And so that's one.
Okay.
The second one is that the burden associated with making those decisions or running that governance or putting those documents together at the system level is multiplied by 100 or 1,000, depending on how many systems you have. So if you really think about the ability to solve mission problems, it's a measure of how big and fast you can scale your organization. So it has become a human capital problem, right? So if I have 100 systems, I need 25 people to do the documentation. If I have 200 systems, I have to have 50 people. It increases the cost of the organization, the cost of delivering. And so I think that's a really big challenge because you can't get away from that because that's the way the machine was built, so to speak.
And at the same time, I'm sure you don't want to have your mission, your organization turn into an IT shop or a technology company because you do still have that mission you have to focus on.
Exactly. The third piece I would say for me in terms of why we're kind of struggling with this challenge is, you know, the IT leaders, the program and project managers themselves, even shadow IT organizations, they all find themselves trying to keep up with that compliance. The questions they get when they say, hey, there's a new regulation that came out, I need to use IT to deliver on that mission. The questions they get are, have you filled out your documentation? Have you gone through the process? And so there's really this push and pull of we're trying to move faster, we're trying to leverage technology, but that process is pulling us back to a very long and arduous kind of checkpoint. And so those three things, I think we're kind of at an inflection point. It's not that the rules and regulations are wrong, right? It's that we're not used to applying them to a platform level of thinking. We're used to applying them to a systems level of thinking. And so if we were making strategic investments in platforms that satisfied the capabilities that all of our systems had, then I'm making that decision once. I'm reporting to OMB once. I'm establishing a security model once, right? I'm upholding my regulatory responsibilities, protecting the data, making sure I'm a good steward of taxpayer dollars and investing in the right things at the right time in a much more strategic way. And so that too can satisfy those responsibilities to OMB, but it's just a philosophical shift in mindset. We're used to using an acronym that then triggers a chain reaction of where's the CFIC document, where's the ATO, where are these things? Instead of realizing that it's not the system that really is so dependent upon that, it's really the investment strategy, the security strategy, the other compliance strategies that really surround that platform decision. Everything is connected, right? Any given agency that's trying to deploy a certain public service to its constituencies, you know, everything around that, from HR and hiring to internal operations and managing the budget to ultimately how that program staff is funded, how they operate, and how they produce that is really part of a supply chain of that service. And so the better we're leveraging integrated, cohesive, end-to-end cloud platforms, the better we're able to connect those individual organizational offices together as part of that supply chain so that, you know, it's optimal. People aren't having to swivel chair from one system to another system, to email, to phone, to all of these different channels just to get a response back to the customer. Those things truly can be connected, automated, so that people are able to satisfy their swim lane of that supply chain to its utmost efficiency without impacting the other pieces and parts.
Knowing that shifting the mindset can be just as difficult, if not more so a lot of times, than the actual work itself, I asked Todd to give us a few next steps for folks looking to move from a solution-by-solution strategy to more of a comprehensive core platform strategy.
I would suggest, you know, conducting a handful of enterprise proofs of concepts focused on business capabilities being delivered from SaaS and, you know, high productivity application platforms as a service. A lot of this is just knowing what's possible and understanding the capability model that comes from these companies and how that aligns to your organization. That would be number one.
Okay.
I would say number two, you know, there is a simple way in a stepwise fashion to rationalize your portfolio. Part of knowing what's possible in the, you know, SaaS and HPA PaaS environments are now knowing how that aligns to what you have and what you do. So rationalizing the portfolio using some simple steps. We've got some simple processes that we take customers through all the time to assist with this. That would be my number two piece. The reason being on that is so many of the systems, again, we're back to the systems level thinking.
Yeah.
So many of the systems were built in ways that, frankly, should not be rebuilt on cloud, right? They should be leveraging the capabilities that come off the shelf and configured to meet that business objective. We don't need the same number of systems when we move to cloud.
Yeah.
We need a cloud that delivers the business capabilities those systems historically delivered.
Well, and I'd say on that point, too, that's a best practice you see, you know, whether it's government or any of these private sector leaders we've talked about. I can't tell you the number of times I've heard somebody say, we don't want to take what our old process was and just try to rebuild that in the cloud. Because I don't think people want to be weighed down by that. You know, there are new and different ways of doing things, and the cloud really opens a lot of that up.
That's right. That's right. So rationalizing the portfolio and going through that thought process will help align your business drivers, your technology drivers to what you now know is possible so that you're putting together a real strategic view of the future so that you, now you know when you do make decisions day to day, they're headed in a direction rather than maybe not being so certain. The third thing and last thing I would say, we all need to focus on simplicity, right? So much of this has become so complex and everyone has a point of view. And I think it's all rendered us, you know, kind of like motionless. I don't know what to do because there's just so much going on. I would say, make it simple. We all know the parts of the process that are painful to live in. They don't have to be painful, right? So I think part of this is acknowledging those challenges and the things that really frustrate you day to day and understanding the options and the opportunities to do them differently. You know, giving people access to innovation means you know what you have access to. You can use it. You can innovate with it. Commoditizing the costs, right? Removing the obstacles of those mission lines or of those people that are really responsible for delivering the mission will then result in, frankly, removing the duplicative administrative overhead and the burden of all of it. So, recap. Understanding the art of the possible, getting some proofs of concepts together will help, I think, you envision where you need to go. Assessing the portfolio against that will help add clarity to how should I do it? When should I do it? How will I fund it? Am I generating enough ROI year over year to get there? It'll help put that into picture. And then lastly, operationalizing that is all about the traditional processes and procedures we use to bring a system to life. There's an opportunity to change that, to refactor that, considering now we're going to be doing all that on a cloud service provider platform.
Thank you for tuning into Our Digital Nation. To learn more about the trends and technology behind the discussion, visit us at salesforce.com/industries/government or follow us on Twitter @SalesforceGOV.